Welcome into episode 130 of the Courtside Crossover with Chris Partee. As always, we're presented by FullPressCoverage.com. Head on over and download the app and check us out on Spotify, Podbean, and every major podcast platform. You can catch me on Instagram, Twitter, and Blue Sky at Chris Partee. All right, got a longtime friend of the show. Haven't had him on since last year, or at least the beginning, towards the beginning of the NBA season. My man, I call him Mr. San Antonio because he's all over the place. Carl Schoening. Carl, what's happening, brother?
Hey, what's going on, CP? I remember when it was CP in the zone was Chris Partee in the zone. It was something like that. That was your Twitter handle. I remember it. Then we're going back a while. So
yeah, that was and that was probably when I was with the zone.
It was
in Austin
zone AM radio.
Well, actually, when we were both there, to be more specific, you know. Yeah. So it's been a long time, Carl. Man, what you been up to lately? We haven't had you on in a while. I know you've been busy. You do football, basketball. You do everything. So what's been going on?
Oh, I don't do rugby and cricket, but I do play by play for UTSA, Austin, yes. Spurs, UIW during football season. So I just wrapped up, I believe, for sure, my busiest basketball season. Very blessed to have done about 50 something play by play games.
Wow.
Between UTSA, Austin Spurs, and a few Division II games that I picked up with St. Ed's here in Austin. So it's a blessing to be busy. And, I appreciate you having me on the show because while I haven't kept up with the NBA as much because of that, you know, I'm still watching every Spurs game. I'm still on NBA Twitter. It's fun time.
Yes, I see you on there. I catch your takes. I catch a lot of your takes on NBA Twitter, on the Twitter, as some people would call it.
Or X. Yeah.
Are you so obviously you're still not called? We talked about this last time. You said you were refusing, I believe, to call it X. You're still not doing. You're kind of holding on to that. I see. You're not calling it X yet.
I remember you closed out the last podcast that we did. It was something along the lines of "Some of us have dreams. Carl's is getting a free Tesla from Elon Musk." And so I'm going to call it X until I get that free Tesla.
Hey, you know what? Keep going. Keep working on it.
I gotta call it X.
Exactly. You're kind of obligated at that point, right?
Yeah. Well, he lives in Austin, so I'll find him one day. I'll tell.
Oh. I mean, that should be easy then. He's in your general area, so vicinity. So I mean, that should not be too hard. All right, Carl. Let's hop into some of this NBA stuff. We're getting into the home stretch of the season. Obviously, today we're going to talk about the playoff races and the play-in races as well. I want to get some of your thoughts since you are a man about the town, the city of San Antonio. I want to get your thoughts on Victor Wembanyama and the season that he's had. It's been a spectacular one. Started a little slow, but I mean, when he started to come on, he really started to come on. So we'll get into that. And then also, I'll get your thoughts on what you think is next for Draymond Green. There's been a lot of incidences just within the last week or two going down with Draymond Green. So we'll get into that as well. First off, let's talk NBA home stretch here. We're down to the point to where most teams have less than 10 games, probably more like 7 or 8 games left this season. Has any team, East or West, just completely surprised you by what they've done or either haven't done this season? You can go East, West. You can pick a team or one or two teams, whatever it is, like that had, you know, maybe they surprised you by how good they've been or how bad they've been.
Yeah, I'll do a little rapid fire here.
Yeah.
Celtics, I knew they were going to be good. I didn't think they would be run away with the East 60 wins good.
Okay.
Then we got OKC. I knew they would be improved, as well as the T-Wolves. Both of them, I didn't think that they would be fighting for the top of the West good. But here we are. They're both atop of the West. And then bad, man, I just don't know what you do if you're the Pistons. At that point, you just got to hit, like, reset on the Pistons. And I know that they're probably not going to do that, but, like, I almost feel like the Pistons just need to say, hey, Cade Cunningham, we can get 4 first-round picks for you right now. Before we can build around you, let's just go ahead and get you 4 first round picks, something like that, you know.
Did you think they'd be better than, I guess, you know, they're 13-61. I mean, it's hard to be much worse, but did you think they'd actually be a little bit better this year?
You know, the Wizards and the Pistons are the two teams where it's horrible. Just like they just don't, even the pieces that they kind of have there really just need to be traded because you can't build around them. I just don't see how either, like Jordan Poole is probably the most disappointing player in the NBA this year, because you would think that, okay, at least he can go out there and get you 30. You can't.
Man, you know what? I really thought coming into the season, Jordan Poole, now I knew they'd be bad, but I thought he'd average 25, 26, 27, maybe more per game, just because I thought he was going to, they were going to basically build that offense around him, coming off of what he was able to do in Golden State for the most part that last year in Golden State with the Draymond thing, the fight before the season, that kind of got things off to a bad start. But just in general, I mean, at one point he averaged 20 a game off the bench for the Warriors. So I thought, okay, he's going here. He's going to start. Obviously he's going to be able to put up 24, 25 points at the least. And we just haven't seen it. And we've seen him basically be relegated to like a buffoon, literally falling all over the court, just doing crazy stuff, and they're not winning. Like, if that was an award, he'd win it. Like you said, the most disappointing player, if that was an award, he'd win it for sure, right?
You thought he would get, like, 35 shot attempts a night, and he'd at least be going off, and, you know, it's like, well, they lost by 15, but he still had 40. I would be surprised. I don't think he's had a 35-plus point game this season. I mean, I don't know. I don't keep up with the Wizards that close.
You know what? He had his first 30-point game, I want to say, a month ago. Like, maybe in January or February. It was like 30 or 31. That was the first one of the season. So, I think you're right. I don't think he's had a 35-point game this year. You're probably right.
Guy that was a piece, like, a solid piece of a championship team two years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, just 2 years ago. And I think he's barely, what, 20? I don't think he's 25 yet.
No, he's pretty young, too. So, yeah. You know. I would say that the you know, just wrap up the disappointments, it's there. And then I don't really think that there's anything too surprising, because even when the Bucks were having their little turmoil where Adrian Griffin got let go, they still, you know, have done all right. It's not like there's anything too disappointing there. And, you know, you can go up and down the West and the East, and I don't think that there's anything too shocking. So, you know, I personally thought the Spurs would be better, but we'll save those kind of conversations for the Spurs.
I'll push back on the Bucks. The disappointing part to me was bringing in Doc Rivers. That's the disappointing part. I just don't understand why teams still think he's the answer to get you over the hump, because he hasn't proven to be. Let's just be honest. When, like, outside of that 1 year with Boston where they won a championship, I get it. He had three future Hall of Famers and another guy on the cusp who could be a Hall of Famer at some point. I mean, I get it. You got to have talent, but you look at all the other talent he's had, just all the talent he's had over the years in general, going from Orlando to Boston, to LA Clippers, now to, to the Sixers, then now to the Bucks. All that talent, he's got one championship to show for it. Two appearances, both with Boston, but one championship to show for it. I just think he's, as a head coach, I think he's overrated. I've thought that for a long time. I've always thought he's overrated. Disappointing. Yeah, I think that's disappointing because if you're going to fire Adrian Griffin, have someone better lined up, in my opinion. If you're going to do, that's just my opinion. Have someone better lined up if you're going to do, because you got a team that should be ready to win a championship.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with you on any of that, to be honest with you. But I do think that there's something about Doc Rivers that star players at least like him, right? Obviously, we could throw out some examples like Ben Simmons. There were some issues. But Ben Simmons, that actually started to be the end of his career, unfortunately. But, you know,
like, he's done.
But like when we talk about like what he actually brings to the table, he has improved their defense and put in plays that I think Damian Lillard likes. And you never know. I'm not going to say he's not a championship coach because he did win a championship. Yeah. But I will say that that was one of the more surprising things. And it's very much a star management team at this point, because you have Dame and you have Giannis, and we'll see how that works out for them in the playoffs. I just don't think that they're good enough, and they knew that they weren't good enough with Adrian Griffin, so you bring in somebody like Doc and you think he'll get you over the hump, and they gave him 4 years, didn't they? We'll figure that out down the road.
Yeah, but we know it's the NBA, it's pro sports, you know. If it's really going that bad, they can move on from him. You know what I mean?
Like, that's true.
It's not a death sentence by any means. Now, they're obviously going to give it, even if they don't win it, even if they were to somehow be upset in the first round again this year, he's going to be back next year because he only had half a season. So it's not like he's going anywhere anytime soon. But I just, again, I've just always looked at Doc. I think he's overrated because I think he gets too much adulation and credit for really for no reason, in my opinion. With all the talent he's had, I think he should have, even Boston, I think they left at least another championship on the table in that 4 or 5 year run they had where they were, you know, stacked there for a while in the East. And then obviously that was around the time when LeBron was coming up and eventually it was going to be hard to deny him. I get that. But I just, yeah, I'm just, as you can tell, I'm not really a Doc Rivers guy. I'm just not.
And NBA Twitter really isn't either. So you're not saying a lot of things that
this is long before NBA Twitter
have opinions of.
Yeah, I felt this way long before that, but I understand what you're saying. Mm-hmm. I get it. But no,
you're not alone in your sentiments there.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. So coming into the season, I really thought, you know, I'm like, it's a foregone conclusion. Bucks are pretty much foregone conclusion. I thought Bucks, Celtics, Eastern Conference Finals. I gave Miami because just you can't never count them out. I gave them an outside shot to, you know, upset somebody and sneak their way back in. But as I'm looking at it now, I don't think both of those teams are going to make it there. The Bucks and Celtics. I think one of them could. But when I look at the Celtics, I still see flaws. Did you see the second game this week they played against Portland the other night where DeJounte Murray hit that game winner?
Oh, Atlanta, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Yeah. Not Portland. Sorry, Atlanta, where DeJounte Murray hit that game winner. Did you see the shot in regulation that Jason Tatum? Yeah. It's moments like that that makes me look at Boston and say they do this too often. It's tied 112. You got 6.7 seconds left. You settle for a three. That's why it's hard to really, even though they've, you know, pretty much blown through the East this year, they probably end up being the only team to win 60 games in the league this year. I don't think that's championship ball. Like, what do you think of the Celtics and their, you know, chances to really make that run to get back to the finals again?
You know, we talked about this the last time I was on the podcast. That goes to show how long ago it really was, I think.
Yeah.
It was, I think, something along the lines of who do you think is going to come out of the East, or the Bucks or the Celtics? And my, you know, you made me pick. And I think I said something along the lines of the Celtics are the better team, but the star power sometimes wins. And I go with the star power in that case. It's not that the Celtics don't have star power. It's just that Giannis is on another tier. And when it comes down to the fourth quarter, you need to get a bucket. I kind of think Giannis has that. Damian Lillard has that.
Okay. Yeah. When it comes to tiers, obviously, so we look at the four stars in that. What do you consider? Porzingis? Do you consider him kind of on that? Maybe not on Tatum and Giannis's level, but in a star tier, you consider him up to be up in that star tier, right?
I kind of like to say, can you be a member of a big three? And Kristaps Porzingis is, if he's your third best player, you've put together a good roster.
Okay. So let's put the five stars from these two teams together. All right. So you got Jason Tatum, Giannis, Dame, Porzingis, and Jaylen Brown. Obviously,
Derek White.
I'm not
the motor that makes that team go.
Yeah, but I'm not that generous. I'm not that generous with the star thing. I'm just not. I'm not. I don't think everyone is a star or superstar. I think you got to be at a certain level. He's a very good role player. I don't think he's star because if you put him in a one or two role, I don't think he produces like that.
If
you want to say he's a great third guy. Yeah, so that's fine.
So even going back to my point just a second ago, he might not be a member of a quote-unquote big three, but to have D. White as your fourth best player means
that's great.
Together a good roster.
I think it's a great roster, but I think it's the difference between that and star. That's just sure. me. I'm not that generous with the star thing.
Too much on that. I just like D. White, and I think he's very worthy of his. I think his max is like 4 years, 122. He's going to get that, no question.
Oh yeah, he's going to get that. No doubt. But you know, with the stars here, or the, you know, I guess the bona fide stars, we'll take Giannis. Actually, obviously, number one. Giannis is number one. You know, on either team. Then you got Jason Tatum. Who's next there? Like, if you got a pick between what Dame brings you or what Porzingis brings you, because obviously I think they would be kind of the next two there. Are you going Jalen Brown over Porzingis? Yeah, because obviously he's been there number two for a long time, but what Porzingis brings a lot to the table. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, it almost goes back to that question of, who's more important, a better player or somebody who does more? And I think Porzingis was the one who, unicorn was the invention of the word. So if you have a floor spacing big, that goes a long way. And Porzingis is playing great basketball. He quietly had his best year in Washington last year.
He did. So, he did.
You know, I think that it's one of those things where, yeah, Porzingis is right there with, you know, the second tier star level of everybody. Oh, you gave me a like on that comment.
Oh, did I? I didn't even hit nothing that time, but I like it though. Hey, I like it. Yeah, Carl, I didn't even know I could do that. I haven't been using this for too long, so I didn't even know I could do that.
I just saw a little bubble with the thumbs up pop.
I saw it too.
Hey, yeah,
I saw it too.
Well, yeah, you know, I think we get into almost a You can't win or lose an argument when you start ranking somebody like Jaylen Brown or Kristaps Porzingis. I would say what Damian Lillard's accomplished puts them above those in terms of being, you know, somebody who's an all-NBA caliber player. But, you know, Dame's a little long in the tooth. He's not ever been great defensively. And not that defense really even matters in this league. So
anymore.
But what it does matter is your defensive anchor like a Porzingis. So if he's healthy and, you know, really playing well around the paint on both ends of the court, especially floor spacing as a big man, he brings the most value. He might not be the better player, but I think that you need somebody like a Kristaps Porzingis to sort of win a championship or maybe just get you over the hump like the Celtics were looking for when they made that trade.
So I can't push back on any of that right there. I think Porzingis, when I saw that they picked up Porzingis, I was like, that could be the piece they've been missing. You know what I mean? Like, because it's obviously, even when they went to the finals a couple of years ago against the Warriors, it was obvious that they were missing something. Also, in my opinion, they were missing a more traditional point guard. I think they got that more so in my man Drew Holiday over Marcus Smart. To me, Marcus Smart was more of a combo guard and even more than that, a two guard, but more primarily a defensive guy. You know, yeah. I guess similar to Drew as well.
I call him an energy guard, just like somebody who comes in, brings energy, and it lifts the team, you know, on both ends of the court. They can do a lot.
Yeah. But even with saying that, I also thought with Smart, if he was not able to bring that energy, then sometimes he brought the team down. If he wasn't on his game in certain day, you know what I mean? Like, because it seemed like anytime he scored 15 points, especially in the playoffs, 15 or more, they were probably going to win. You know what I mean? He was always going to bring the defense. If he scored 15 or more, they were going to win, but he couldn't always do that consistently in big games.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And I think that they had a really good offseason, and we're seeing the results of that. They're clearly the best team. I think they have, do you have the standings right there? They're at least 10 games ahead of everybody.
Yeah, they're 11 games ahead of Milwaukee, who's in second. Yeah. I mean, they are regular season wise, they've been head and shoulders really the best in the league, not just in the East. Because, you know, like we mentioned earlier, they're going to be the only team that wins 60 games this year.
So that means they'll have home court advantage throughout the playoffs, which they need because they have a tendency of going to game sevens.
And,
you know, I also think that it's just one of those things where when we're talking MVP voting, despite everything we just said about how Jason Tatum might not necessarily be that tier one level star,
Not a superstar. He's not a superstar yet, but he's right there. He's close. He's very close.
I think there's something that needs to be said about best player on the best team tends to get MVP votes, and I think he deserves MVP, even though, you know, we talk about how he does have a stacked team, sure, but, like, there is something about being the best player on the best team that I think goes a long way. And, you know, we could talk MVP down the road a little bit here because I might be proven wrong on some of that. I might think SGA deserves it, something along those lines. But I'd go with Tatum.
Since you mentioned it, I'm going to give you the top five right now.
Okay.
As far as who's where and, you know, the leaderboard. So it looks like, you know, it's either... Well, what I'm looking at Basketball Reference right now, the MVP award tracker. I probably should have pulled up NBA, but, you know, just the top five guys, not necessarily in order. You got Nikola Jokic, Luka's up there, Giannis is up there, Shea is up there, and then Jason Tatum is up there. They got him fifth here. And other, I think NBA earlier, maybe a week or so ago, I saw Tatum like fourth or fifth. So he's not getting a ton of respect. Now, coming into the season, I picked him to win MVP this year because I thought he was going to step up. And I thought Boston would probably be the one or at least the two seed, which obviously they are. But he's not getting that MVP love, it doesn't seem like.
And I don't see how you could put Luka ahead of him except for it being a stats thing, which I guess, you know, that's understandable. But also... what if Jason Tatum were sort of on that level of putting up a ton of stats? Stats accumulation maybe shouldn't reflect more than winning, but I get it. I just need an American to win. Can we get an American to win the MVP in the 2020s?
Apparently not.
No. That's the only American on the list because SGA is Canadian.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a lot of people forget that he is Canadian. He is Canadian. I mean, well, at least that's North America.
Yeah.
If you want to go like that, it is North America. But, you know, the players that are coming from around the world and, you know, from whether it's Africa or, you know, somewhere in Europe, mainly both of those, because you had Embiid last year with MVP. It just seems like, you know, they've caught up to us as far as playing. And just the way their young players are trained. I mean, you know, a lot of those guys are starting to play professional ball at like 15 years old. Mm-hmm. They're playing in professional leagues in Europe at like 15, 16 years old. While our guys are, you know, messing with AAU, you know, playing high school ball too. But a lot of AAU and AAU is not concerned with skills. And, you know, it's about winning and stacking up the most talent on one team to win tournaments. That's what AAU ball is in this country.
And we've overvalued athleticism in the sport. And the thing about high school and, you know, pretty much younger is if you're just the best athlete on the court, you're going to wreck shop.
Exactly.
And it's like, just go out there and be the best athlete. And then that's when they get to the NCAA and definitely the NBA ranks. And you find out that it's like, it goes back to the Charles Barkley quote. It's like, he can run like a deer and he can jump like a deer, but deer aren't good basketball players. So, yeah, like...
It's very true.
like you know, it's one of those things where you do got to start to realize we're lacking a lot of fundamental development skills to a certain extent. And then also, I just think basketball's exploded across the globe.
We're
far away from seeing a lot of really good players come out of Africa. Like the, what is it? Basketball Africa League. That's going to be amazing. Like that. It's a short term investment right now. Buy low on that stock because it's about to skyrocket.
You know, I was actually at a friend's house. I was in Dallas a couple weeks back. And I was at my buddy's house down there I was visiting with, and we were just watching basketball. I think it was a Sunday or whatever. And, you know, he turned on NBA TV and that NBA Africa League was on, and, you know, watching some of those guys. And yeah, you know, pretty soon you're probably going to see more and more talent coming from that league, you know, transitioning, whether it be G League first and then possibly into the league. But yeah, so the talent from around the world is, I mean, we see it in the Olympics and in, you know, the national game, you know, tournaments every 2 years or 4 years, whatever it is. We see how tough it is sometimes for us, for the USA, to come out on top. And we don't always come out on top anymore. Yeah. It doesn't work like that anymore.
Mm-hmm. We can't roll out our B-plus team and assume that we're going to win by 20. And that's only in the last 8 years.
Barely not even a decade. Yeah. So, but, I mean, all of this, what we're seeing now with how the how basketball is blown up around the globe, you know, this all goes back to the Dream Team 92. And this is what this is what the NBA wanted. They wanted to make it global. Mm-hmm. So the way I see it is like, all right, you know, let's not complain now, because this is what it may not be what we wanted or asked for, but the NBA wanted to be global. You got global now, so don't complain about no American MVPs. We can't complain about it now.
For the record, I was just joking about that.
No, yes, I get it. I get it. Yeah, we're all joking. I get it, but see, we've never seen this before. You know what I mean? Like, we've never seen this run of the best in the league being from somewhere other than America. We've never seen this. Either one of us, and even before our time on Earth, this has never happened in the NBA. So it's all new.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in the NBA in terms of trends, and I know we're probably way off from whatever question asks us about this, but A, it's becoming more global, but B, we're finally hitting a talent pool that grew up watching Steph Curry. So we at first...
Bingo.
Yeah, we first had a talent pool leading up to Steph Curry that finally grew up with a three-point shot. The reason we didn't shoot threes in the 80s and 90s wasn't necessarily because it was a bad shot. It was because the coaches and the talent pool weren't necessarily used to jacking up a bunch of threes. But now that that's changed, we're going to have a whole generation that grew up watching Steph Curry. And because of that three-point spacing and just the high volume of threes, we're going to have a much more wide open, high scoring league. So that's just going to be an interesting development to see as well, which is why I wouldn't be too surprised to see a lot of quote unquote Steph Curry clones. You sort of see it with Trae Young, and it's only going to get crazier as you know, more people start entering the league.
Yeah. Yeah. And then also, you know, to that fact about the 3-point shot being a bad shot, you go back to the, I guess, 80s and 90s, you know, and even the early and mid 2000s, for the most part, most of those coaches that are, whether you're in, you know, high school, college, or the NBA, we're looking at old school coaches that have been around going back to, you know, like the 60s and 70s, right? Whether they played at that time or were already starting to coach at that time. So the 3-point shot, and you know, the game was played inside out. It was always, you want to have a big man. You want to play inside out, not outside in like we play it today, right? So, yeah, that shot was looked at as a low percentage shot. Let's not say bad. Let's say a low percentage shot, the 3-point shot. It was looked at as low percentage. And, you know, you want to get in as close as possible. That's why you talked about athleticism. Well, that's why athleticism has always been valued so highly in our game here in America, because that's kind of like the root of, you know, it's a higher percentage shot. You get as close to the basket as possible. Now, if you can make it look fancy and pretty and powerful with the jam, then do that. or just get it inside and you lay it up, whatever it is. So, you know, I think a lot of those things factor in. You talk about Steph Curry. Yeah, we're in a generation now to where a lot of these kids are growing up having watched Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and, you know, even, you know, like you said, a clone, which is Trae Young. A lot of these guys.
Lillard's up there.
Damian Lillard's up there. Another guy that can shoot from 45 feet just on a whim, like it's nothing. Can just come up court, pull up from 40 feet, and, you know, it goes in. We're seeing now, there's a debate whether or not how good or how bad that is for the game. We're not here to get into that today, because that is a debate out there. Some people don't like it. They think it's bad for the game, but it's a fact. That's what happened. And when you see the talent from around the world and a lot of these guys, they're already working on more skill-based game than our players here in America anyway. So now you add the fact that they've been watching Steph Curry for the last 10 years, a lot of these guys, yeah, it's kind of easy to see why the world is catching up to America as far as hoops go, not just on the NBA level.
Yeah. And you know, there's a lot that goes into it, but I really do think that we need to realize the basketball purists grew up in the 60s and 70s, and the jump shot didn't even really get popularized until the 60s. So we're now talking about really, grand scheme of thing, third generation of jump shooters, because it's what the The three-point line wasn't even made until 1962 in the American Basketball League that Abe Saperstein started. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole right now. But then, obviously, the ABA brought it back, and then the NBA, when they merged, said, no, that's too gimmicky. We'd like to keep it pure. And then they're like, you know what? We do actually like it, and they brought it back at sometime in the 80s. So
no, I think it was like 79, somewhere around there. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I'd have to look up I have the entire timeline of the three-point shot memorized. But, like, it didn't even make it to the college game until the 80s for sure. So, you know, we're really talking about a grand scheme of things. The three-point shot where the a kid's been handed a basketball, this is the sport of basketball, if you shoot from behind that line, it's worth three. Those players are only 40 years or younger right now. So, we're talking a really big development and change in the game because we've created this high-value shot. I am in favor of the four-point shot being about 40 feet away because we do have a talent pool of people who can hit a four-point shot. Like, it's just not worth it. But if you start making it, 40 feet away, I think that there's plenty. We saw Dame Lillard do it like three times, nothing but net in the All-Star game this year, didn't we? Like, if you watch the All-Star game, it's getting to that point where you have good shooters and you have to start defending them 40 feet out. And I absolutely hate, especially in the G League, no one's going to hurt their three-point percentage by putting up a shot at the end of the quarter. And you see that in the NBA sometimes, too, but it's really in the G League. It's like, who's going to volunteer to hurt their three-point shot because there's 2 seconds left and we have to go length of the court? And okay, if you make it a four-point shot, I think a lot more people will jack it up. And I had a baseball friend tell me one time that the most exciting part about basketball to him were the heaves at the end of the quarters.
Oh, God.
And I'm like, that's cool. I get it. Because what if it goes in? You just saw a 60-footer go in, So I'm open to the long ball shot because Abe Saperstein, who invented the 3-point shot back in 62, was the founder of the Globetrotters. So you can call it a circus shot. He found it entertaining. It's meant to be entertaining. Now, I don't want every single shot to be from beyond 23 feet, but how do we get to that point? I don't know. Maybe we only allow 6 4-point shots, and I'm gonna say we need to cap the 3-point shot, but we're never going to.
So, when you say cap it, what do you mean? Explain that.
I don't know. No more than 10 3-point shots a quarter. How about that? You get
so
10 3-point shots a quarter.
So if you hit 10 in the first quarter, then every other long shot after that is just worth 2 still? Is that what you're saying?
Sure.
That
sounds about right. Yeah. Just because I don't want it to eventually be where we're jacking up 63s a game.
Oh, I think we're probably going to get there.
We're almost there. I think you'll see plenty of teams put up 40.
I mean, we saw a couple years ago, I think the Jazz were putting up 40 a game.
Yeah.
Like 40, 41. So, I mean, we've been there already. I think it's come down a little bit the last couple years, like high 30s for the most part on average for teams per game, but we'll get to 50 at least, say within the next 3 to 5 years, we'll get to 50 where at least a team or two is going to jack up 50. I mean, because, we see it all the time where guys will come down and they'll have a layup in the middle, they'll have a layup maybe in traffic, but then they'll pass it out. Kick it out for a three, or they might be damn near wide open and kick it out for a three. Instead.
I see that, and it just makes me rub my temples like every time. Why? You had a layup. you messed up for a corner three. And that's almost the crazy thing is if you go by the Daryl Morey School of Analytics or somebody along those lines, the best
Daryl Morey.
Yeah, well, the best.
That's your guy. I know that's your guy.
Oh, no, it's not. Oh, yeah. No, I mean, hey, I appreciate how crafty he is as a general manager and how he doesn't really seem to care about other people's opinions. But, I think it was Daryl Morey who said the best shot in basketball is the corner three. The second best shot is any other three. And that's almost where I think we do lose a little bit of we've already lost most of the post-up fundamentals, right? So it is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I know we're talking philosophy of the game at this point.
That's fine.
We can circle it back. But yeah, that could be another podcast episode of where the game's going.
Definitely. All right. getting back to it. So I want to ask you this real quick. We talked about the East a little bit in Boston. I want to talk about the West. So right now in the West, at the top, you got Minnesota and OKC tied at exactly 51-22. And then a half game back is the Nuggets. Personally, I don't see, I know they've lost a couple times, the Nuggets have to the Suns, but I don't really see another team that's going to beat the Nuggets in a seven game format. If healthy, if the Nuggets, you know, if they're healthy, Jamal Murray's been, you know, a little injured lately, but, you know, he should be fine. If healthy, I think the Nuggets make it back to the finals. Are you taking the Nuggets or the field? If you got to pick it, really, you're taking the Nuggets too.
Oh, yeah.
Give me a reason or two why you think it's the Nuggets over everyone else in the West.
Chemistry goes a long way, and I think that's the team that has the most chemistry built up. Jokic just knows how to conduct that team like a maestro. Jokic is probably still the best player in the NBA, at least in terms of offensive stats accumulation. He's probably right there next to Luka Doncic, which I think that those are big things. They seem to have a very well-put-together roster. They might not have the... You know, it's arguable Jamal Murray's their second best player, but it's arguable who their second best player is just because you have Aaron Gordon out there really mastering his role. And I think that overall there's a coaching factor. I love Coach Malone. He's great. So you kind of put together the sum is greater than the total of their parts. Is that the saying? That's sort of how I feel about the Nuggets, and they sort of deserve that respect being the defending champions. I might not be saying that if they didn't win the championship last year, but yeah. I got to see them in up close and in person this year when the Spurs played them in Austin. And
okay.
I just kind of, despite a few other distractions going on during that game, came away with they're very good. And I don't think that I've seen a better team. I've probably gone to fewer NBA games this year than I've gone the rest of the year, but I still keep an eye on the NBA pretty closely. And I'm trying to think before I commit to that. I did see the Celtics this year, and they were really good too.
Yeah.
I think we're just heading for a collision course of Celtics-Nuggets finals.
Yeah? You think so?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, it's not far-fetched by any means. I mean, obviously... They could, but obviously, the Celtics are going to end up being the number one seed. They are the number one seed. They're going to win. They're up by 11 games over the Bucks right now. And then over in the West, with a few games left, the Nuggets are a half game out of first. So they could still end up. And I honestly don't think they need the number one seed. But I think if they get the number one seed, I think the rest of the West is really in trouble because now you got to go through there. And any game seven is in Denver. And I believe they do. I believe they do have the best home record in the West right now, regardless of seeding. Right. Yeah, they got. Yeah, they're 29-8. Well, they're tied with OKC for the best home record. So you know, they're right
OKC,
there.
And OKC would be my second pick, just because they're also a very complete team. I like
to make the finals
going on. I think if it came down to the Nuggets versus the Thunder, the Nuggets win because of experience. Yeah. But sometimes experience can be overrated, you know, like anybody that the Warriors face right now, I'm not picking the Warriors because of experience. You know what I mean?
No. As far as OKC, I love OKC, love Shea, Chet, you know, all the guys. But my thing is just looking at the history of the NBA, it's rare that really young teams like that go that far.
Yeah,
it's just rare. You saw this same OKC franchise, you know, 12, 13 years ago when they went with Durant, Harden, and Westbrook. That's been a while ago, right? That they went to the finals. But other than that, you don't see a lot of really, really young teams getting, going that far and especially winning it. Now, I'm not saying they can't make a run and end up in the Western Conference Finals. I just think, it's going to be hard for them. In my opinion, being that young and not having, I think that's where experience does matter. When you haven't really been there, you haven't experienced you haven't been in the trenches of these, you know, deep playoff runs. I think that's where the experience kind of can come up and, you know, bite you in the butt, not having it at least.
So the West is weird this year because there's a few teams that kind of fall into that category.
That are young, right?
Yeah. So really, the one team that's not young that OKC might face...
Denver?
Is well, I mean, in the first round.
Oh, in the first round. Okay.
Depending on how everything shakes out, Dallas is one of those teams that they have enough playoff experience that you can't really say that they're young like OKC is.
No, not
that. I think OKC beats Dallas just because Luka can only do so much. And surprisingly, you might have to fact check me on this. I believe SGA has more 30-point games this season than Luka, which is surprising.
I mean,
I think I just looked that up.
That is surprising, but they've both had a lot.
Yeah.
And if he does, it's probably close. But it's not that shocking because SGA has just been killing it. Yeah. I mean, you can't deny him.
Yeah, I think he's like my dark horse. I would say he's second for MVP.
MVP?
Because he should. Minnesota is another one of those young teams, but they're the one seed right now. So I don't think they'll be on the other side of the bracket most likely.
And I'll be honest, I did an article on them maybe a little bit over a month ago. I'm not a believer in Minnesota. I don't think they're even going to make it to the conference finals, whether they get the one seed or not, because Anthony Edwards, as far as like their big three, he's the only one that I really trust in. He's the one that I think has that dog in him. Mm-hmm. And now obviously Cat is out. So that's going to hurt. That's going to hurt them. But even with Cat, I didn't believe in him. I just didn't. And their fans let me know about it because they didn't like what I had to say. They found me everywhere on social media and let me know about it, which is fine. And then they kind of started dipping before he got hurt. Then he got hurt. But I'm just not a believer in Minnesota right now. Rudy Gobert in the postseason, we see what happens to him every year in the playoffs. Teams get him on the perimeter in the pick and roll, and he just gets abused. It's just not funny.
Let's go with this. OKC ends up being the two seed or the one of the two seed, right? They could fall as low as three, obviously.
Yeah. Denver, yeah.
But I don't think the Clippers are catching up to any of those top three.
No, they're five games back. Clippers are like 4.5 back of Denver. So no, they're not going to catch them.
So if OKC plays a play-in game, do you see any of Phoenix, Sacramento, the Lakers, or Golden State beating them in the first round?
You said if OKC plays one of the play-in teams,
Oddly, the Lakers are my dark horse there. And the Suns, you just don't know. The Suns are the biggest enigma in the NBA this year.
The Suns, yes, they're such a... They are, and that's a perfect word. Enigma is the perfect word for the Suns because they obviously have the star power, but the depth is not... Now, they've added some pieces, but the depth just isn't there enough for me. But then they'll go out and, they can beat Denver on any given night. You know what I mean? Like they can match up with who we both think is the best team in the West. They can match up like it's best. The most complete team in the West, they can match up with them any night, but then other nights
they lost to the Wimbyless Spurs the other night.
And see stuff like that. Like, it's like, come on, man, really? So what, like, who are you actually? We don't really know who the Suns are. Basically tomorrow's April 1st. So we still don't know who the Suns are. And that worries me. That really worries me.
So I think it's fair to say OKC is getting past the second round if they play a play-in team. Unless maybe I would say Dallas is the worst of their potential opponents. But
why Dallas? Because of Luka Soli or?
Yeah. I mean, the name of the game is to still outscore your opponent. And Luka just does some stuff that is kind of crazy. But and Kyrie. Let's not ever forget Kyrie because he's still an all-star level guard. But,
and he's been on good behavior, so.
I hear he's been phenomenal to work with in Dallas. Anybody who like came in not knowing who Kyrie was before Dallas has no opinion negative of Kyrie. He's been amazing in Dallas, apparently.
Well, when you get down to your last final chances, and you tend to shape up.
That's true, and I think big part of his thing was being a anti-COVID person in New York City. That didn't help for sure.
Well, I'm not even, not even just that, just everything. Like,
he's
you
been
know,
a little weird.
Just,
yeah.
you know,
I
everything
think he's ever been terrible.
He's done. Yeah. No, he's not terrible. No. I mean, he's not, he's not punching guys, elbowing him in the face, hitting him in the junk. He's not doing stuff like that.
We still have to get to that one, don't we?
We're going to get to that in a minute here.
And then the one other, again, talking about just how crazy the West is different this year is the Pelicans, because low-key Zion Williamson is probably the best player on the non-home court advantage teams. Maybe okay. Luka first, and then Zion.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I just don't think that you could say even Kevin Durant or Devin Booker at this point are better than Zion. But Zion is finally becoming the player that we hoped he would be. He's in good shape, and he's playing any position on the court.
And yeah, you said good shape. That's the main thing. He's been on the court.
He's staying away from that gumbo.
Stay away from all of it. Him being in good shape has led to him being primarily healthy this year, mm-hmm. which is honestly, that's all you. I mean, you know, if he's on the court, he's going to play well. But you need him on the court. So, I mean, that's all that you can really ask for out of in OKC is that he just is on the court.
Yeah,
that's really what he just needs to be there, because, you know, if he's there, he's going to average, you know, his 23, 24, whatever he's averaging a game. You know, he's going to do that. Now, I would like him to rebound more. That's just me. I think I would love him to average more rebounds, but, you know, he's still a great player. I'm not taking anything from him. That's just, yeah. That's the old school in me. I would like him to rebound more, but you know, not for everybody.
But I don't think that OKC loses to anybody 5 through 10 is my end point here. So they at least make the second round is my guess.
I give the Lakers, you know, if they're
Lakers
healthy,
always have a puncher's chance because they have LeBron.
I think if the Lakers, because of LeBron, if dominant AD shows up, I don't think there's anything they can do with him. You know what I mean? I don't think if dominant, but see, game to game, you just, again, kind of like you said about Phoenix being an enigma, Anthony Davis is the same way. You don't know from game to game if he's going to come out and be as dominant as he can be. Now, you know, defensively, he's going to give you his all, but he doesn't always go for it offensively. He's not always aggressive on the offensive end.
I appreciate us getting 50 minutes into this and not talk Lakers all that much. So, you know,
right? That might be a record.
Yeah, because it's the Lakers. You know, everybody wants to talk Lakers. They're currently sitting at 41-33, which is actually a little surprising to me considering that they're, you know, the ninth seed, but that's par for the course for the West.
That's the West.
And meanwhile, that would actually have them the seventh seed in the East. You know what I mean? So they are what they are. And you're right. You know, AD's inconsistency on the offensive end, at least, is a big deal. And I just don't think that they're going to have another run in them. But I do think that they can beat anybody in the first round because they're the Lakers and they'll probably run out of gas, you know, like
last year.
I think this is the last year of LeBron in LA.
You think so?
That's another conversation. But
yeah,
if they don't even make it out of the play-in, yes. Because since winning that championship, maybe one time they've had a play-in. One time they weren't a play-in team.
Yeah,
2020. So maybe 2021 was the last time they weren't a play-in team.
You might be right.
I don't have that off the top of my head. It's been a long 3 years, but
yeah.
But still, like, that's sort of where they are with LeBron and AD. I don't think that the Lakers are going to move on from him because it's not the Lakers' MO to part with a star. But I could see LeBron opting out. And man, if I'm any team in the NBA, I call his bluff and draft Bronny. I don't care if it's the 10th pick overall, which, ooh, you know, that's how it goes. I draft Bronny because there's a 2% chance that becomes LeBron James Sr. You draft LeBron James Jr. I know.
Damn.
But you know, obviously certain exceptions. I don't see LeBron going to, say, Salt Lake City, you know.
Okay, yeah.
You know, like, but like, you know, If there's a reasonable exception there's a few teams that could maybe, you know, get LeBron on, you know, their side. But we'll move on from that topic. That's another topic for the offseason podcast.
Definitely. We'll definitely revisit that because I got thoughts on the whole Bronny James experience and his draft prospects as well. So real quick, before we move on to, I want to get to Victor Wembanyama real quick here. I'm going to ask you the same question about Boston or the field in the East. And you don't have to go elaborate.
Yeah, yeah.
Boston. Really?
Yeah.
See, I'm taking the field in the East. To get to the finals. I'm taking the field.
This is the year that Boston gets over the hump. Because,
and wins it?
Yeah.
Because they got to the finals two years ago. They just didn't win it.
You know, the Heat don't have that Heat culture magic this year.
And you don't think so?
I don't.
Even though their team's a little deeper, it seems like their team is better than last year, actually.
Yeah.
Talent-wise, just talent, all-around talent. It seems like they're better than last year.
They became one of the better three-point shooting teams in the playoffs last year, and I think that really propelled their run.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Shot the great equalizer. Yeah. I don't see them doing that this year.
I
think this is the year that Boston doesn't need a Game 7 to get to the finals. I think that they knock everybody out. It's on record. Yeah, I'm taking Boston. Like, if you had asked me at the beginning of the season, it probably would have been Milwaukee, but now, I think that's what I said, but it was Boston or Milwaukee. This year, it's right now,
is Boston. You
know, 2 weeks away from the playoffs, Boston.
Okay, I can respect that. I can definitely respect that. All right, let's jump into your boy, Victor Wembanyama.
All right. Oh, I thought you were going to Draymond Green at first. But, yeah.
Nah, we'll get to Draymond Green. We'll get there. We won't spend too long on Wemby. So I believe when you were on before, you said pretty much foregone conclusion, Wemby's going to win Rookie of the Year. And he's going to win that. I think you said that, right?
Oh, yeah.
And basically, he's going to win it now. As good as Chet's been, or what's the kid in Charlotte?
Oh, Brandon Miller.
Brandon Miller, like they're not Wemby. He's gonna win it. What about because you also said there's a good shot he wins Defensive Player of the Year. I think you said that too.
I did say that.
And he's right there. He's right there. Mm-hmm. I think he's like top two or three as far as odds right now.
Spurs have the best defense in the NBA when he's on the court.
So what do you think is gonna happen? You think that's and I believe he would be the first to win Rookie of the Year and Defensive Player of the Year in the history of the league.
Oh, wow. And he deserves it. And he should be on an all-NBA team as well.
Well, I mean, if he does, though, if he wins both of those, I think he will be at least on the defensive, you know, obviously
he'll be
on the
defensive team. No question.
He'll be defensive. No question. Yeah. I don't know if he'll make all-NBA first team, maybe second, because they have a second and a third team.
Yeah.
So he'll probably do one of those. I don't know about first team, though.
I would say the Spurs overall record hurts him from making an all-NBA team lock. But
actually
look, because this year's the first year that they're eliminating positions. So you don't have to worry about, we're listing him as a center and there's only three votes for center that we can give out. You just go with top 15 players if you're a voter this year. Wemby is, and I say this knowing the great season that Jokic has had and the great season that Embiid's had, Wemby is the best five in the NBA. He might be the best player in the NBA.
He's the best five right now?
Yes.
Even with Nikola, Joel, I know Joel Embiid's hurt, but even Joel Embiid, those are the last two MVPs. They won three combined, those two, and they're the last two MVPs we've had. So he's the best five right now.
I'm not even talking talent potential. I'm saying right now,
wow,
Wembanyama is the best player in the NBA.
Hot takes.
Hot takes indeed. Yeah,
that's all right.
I mean, if we're not talking about who would you rather have for the next 10 years, if we're having a pickup game today, I'm picking Vic, number one overall. He is that good. If you're not paying that close attention, you're just watching the highlights. He does stuff that, like, sure, the highlights are great. The highlights are phenomenal, actually. He does things that you've never seen somebody do on the basketball court, good highlights. But when it comes to the actual both ends accumulation, he's just there. And I think a lot of it is there. He started off figuring out how the NBA works. They went with a sort of positionless five where there wasn't really a determined point guard. And he was the four because Zach Collins was kind of hoping to be a four spacing big. But I think somewhere in mid-December, they went with him at the five, and the Spurs have just been drastically better, and he's been putting up unreal numbers. He had a 40-20-7 game the other day.
Yes, he did.
He only had one block, but do you know how many times they went towards him and said, oh, that's Vic, I'm backing up. I'm not even going to try him. He has that don't even try me level of intimidation right now. And that's worth a lot to me. Like, people will go at Embiid. People will go at Jokic for sure. But Vic has the, I have a good shot here if it were anybody else in the league. You know, like, I'm right underneath the basket. I can maybe get a hook, and I'm not going to try Vic.
He's so long.
A 10-block game pretty easily. He'll have a quintuple double at some point. He'll break the 5-by-5 record.
Wow. You know,
there's so many. We are witnessing probably this is the way I think I described it on the podcast. If I didn't, I've used it several times before the beginning of the season, and now I think it's even more apparent. He is Wilt Chamberlain, who grew up watching Kevin Durant. Like, you know, Wilt Chamberlain, maybe he saw Bob Pettit. He probably saw the Globetrotters. You know, there was no TV back in the 50s. Well, there was TV back in the 50s, but the NBA wasn't televised like that.
No.
This is a just unreal athlete at unreal size, even for the NBA, that can do it all. And I just don't think that there's a better player in the NBA. And once he puts on some strength and maybe another 15 pounds, he can, like, just go right to the rim and nobody's going to be able to stop him. That's probably the one thing that limits him, is he doesn't necessarily have the grown man strength yet. Once he gets that grown man strength, nope.
he's 19 years old. I mean, we can't expect him to have that right. You know what I mean? Like, he's 19. Let's give him 4 or 5 years into the league, you know, when he's closer to 25. You know what I mean? He'll put on a little muscle, a little bit of weight. I think he'll be fine. That was really the only thing that concerned me coming in, is, you know, him being so thin. But obviously that hasn't been an issue.
It just hasn't. Yeah, I don't think he's skinny. I think he's 19 years old. Chet Holmgren's skinny. You know,
that's true. Chet is a lot thinner than like, he's thin.
Yeah,
like, for real.
Like, Wimby's probably legitimate 235. It's just,
you think,
spread
so?
Out over. Yeah, it's just spread out over a 7'5" frame.
God.
You know, and it's not that, like, if you were to, like, see him in person, his back is really big. You know,
really? Okay.
He has solid core size. It's not overly big, but he has really big shoulders and core. And it's just a matter of time before he fills out that frame. And like you said, 23-year-old Wembanyama is going to be just unstoppable. I'm talking multiple MVPs, probably like 5 in a row. The Spurs.
I don't know about five in a row.
About to go on a run. This is. I've seen a lot of great basketball players. There is not a higher potential basketball player I have ever seen, and you know. I know I've seen a lot of LeBron. I've seen a lot of Kobe. Tim Duncan might still be the best basketball player of all time that I've ever seen, because Tim just knew how to be a modern day Bill Russell. You know what I mean? Where it's like, you know how to put, basketball's a team sport. You know what I mean? So the fact that you know how to get the, okay, I could drop 27 points per game, but I'd rather my Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili teammates be better because I'm letting them score something and I'm only averaging 20 a game. You know, that goes a long way. That's part of it. And I think, you know, that goes against that. That's the opposite of why I don't like stats in the argument with LeBron and Kobe versus Tim Duncan, because Tim just knew how to make his team better. And at the end of the day, it's a team sport to win. And nobody did more winning than Tim Duncan. No team has a winning record against Tim Duncan. He won all those 50 win games, never missed the playoffs. Okay, that's enough Tim Duncan talk. Back to Wimby. Wimby is the only reason the Spurs aren't better is because I think there is a you only really added Wembanyama to this team, and he is somebody that everybody comes out with their A game. A team will come out with their A game because they know they have to against Wimby. And then also, he's been on a minutes restriction on and off throughout the season because of injuries. They were taking it easy on him.
But yeah.
Next year, 2 years from now, whenever he starts averaging 36, 40 minutes
exactly.
per game, it's just not going to be fair. I'm talking multiple 40, 20 games, 10 block games, 7 steal games. Like, He leads the league in blocks, sure, but I think he also leads the league in blocks and steals accumulations. So
I believe I heard that stat earlier in the week.
Yeah, like and he also leads the league in you better not try me, you know, like if you go right there.
I wish that was a stat category. You better not try me. I wish that was actually a category.
Shot alterations. There's so many things that Wimby leads the league in that. I really do think that he is the best player in the NBA right now. It's not really. I don't think there's a, like, if they were like, what if they're like, it would be crazy. Just give the Spurs a little bit of time. They're still really young. They have.
Yeah. They're another young team. They're another young team. Yeah.
Their vet is Devontae Graham, who's 29.
Yeah,
we have a 30-year-old on the team. Oh, man. We have a 30-year-old on the team. I'm blanking. Like, I think Zach Collins at 26 or whatever he is one of the older rotation players.
Wow.
So, you know, I would I'm just saying it right now. I would love it if LeBron James came to the Spurs, because then you kind of have, anyway, we'll move on from that. That's a pipe dream.
Carl, no, I can't really disagree on much of that. Now, the five in a row MVP, five straight, I don't know about that, but
it looks like
Wemby is going to win a few of those at some point. I don't think it's going to happen within the first couple of years, but you know, once we get into like year 3-4 and beyond, and the Spurs start winning games, like going back to the playoffs, making runs, things like that, if that's going to happen, then yeah, he's definitely going to be in the talk for hell MVPs and more defensive player of the year awards. Cause it looks like he's going to win that and rookie of the year for sure. Defensive player of the year. He's got a great shot at it this year. Want to ask you real quick, how long do you think he's extended Pop's career at this point?
You know, I think they publicly said it was a 5-year extension, that Pop signed. I don't know how many years that extends on. Pop's one of these guys that he can go out on his own terms whenever he likes.
Of course.
I honestly partly think that they publicly said 5 years so Pop can stop answering those questions of when are you going to retire?
Yeah.
Is he going to play out his whole 5 years? That's up to him. I have no idea what it's like being in your 70s. I have friends that are in their 70s, and they seem like they really enjoy doing what they do, but they are also maybe ready to take some breaks. Let's put it that way. I don't know what the game plan is with Pop, but I do think that he's at least enjoying it. And hey, Pop wants to win too. You know,
yeah.
A lot of people are saying we need to make win now moves in the offseason because of Wemby. Pop's the one who needs the win now moves, you know, because I know he wants to get back to championship days.
Of course.
I don't know what's going to be available, but this is also kind of a perfect storm. Wemby coming to the Spurs and the second apron era is what I'm calling it. There's going to be a lot of teams that they built their rosters not understanding that the CBA was going to change this drastically. So, I think, you know, I'm just throwing out some names, not necessarily to the Spurs. Carl Anthony Towns might need to be on the move. Kevin
Durant. I think he will be. I think he will be soon.
And this is financial reasons, not anything related to, like, I think something along the lines of if you're in the second apron for 3 out of 5 consecutive years, you forfeit a first round pick. There's a lot of like stipulations in overspending in the NBA in this new CBA. So I think Kevin Durant's going to be gone this offseason because of that. Unless the Suns go on a run, they need to get what they can for KD right now because they exhausted a lot of their resources getting Bradley Beal, who still has a no trade clause in his contract. And I'm sure we could probably think of a few more. The first real second apron, it's not that we don't like him, that we're paying him too much, was John Collins. He got traded for a second round pick, you know, when the asking price for John Collins was multiple first round picks. And then they realized that it's like, oh, hey, A, he broke his finger and he became a terrible 3-point shooter that last year at Atlanta.
That never helps.
Yeah. And but then B, it's like, oh, hey, with these new CBA rules, we need to get off John Collins. So
fast.
So we'll be seeing a lot of guys. Cleveland has some decisions to make. On who they're going to keep, because they can't keep all 4 of their guys that are going to be high salary guys.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not saying all of these names for the Spurs potentially. I'm just saying you're going to see some movement that you wouldn't really expect on the previous CBA. And the average NBA fan is not up on, you know, the salary cap, information. So hopefully they don't say, oh, wow, what did he do, when they see that, you know, this guy's been moved for not necessarily peanuts, but what you might not consider equal value, because a lot of it has to come down to the salary cap of the other team.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now, Carl, you make great points there. Great points there. All right. Real quick, before I get you out of here, I want to get your thoughts on Draymond Green. We kind of touched briefly on some of the things that he's been into really all season, but earlier this week, he got ejected from another game, and a clip went viral of Steph Curry seemingly, you know, tearing up, getting emotional, we'll say, on the court after the ejection. And probably for many, many different reasons. But, you know, what do you think's next for Draymond Green? Just realistically, like, what do you think is the next step for him?
I honestly don't know how he keeps getting away with a lot of these clips that only he does. Because if you do something, NBA Twitter, Shaq than a fool, somebody will find it and you will be noticed for this. But Justin this week got that double technical, right? He got the clothesline of Patty Mills, which I was surprised that didn't get him ejected.
Oh, man.
I feel like any other player, that's a flagrant too, which is unnecessary and excessive contact, right? Like, you're not going after the ball, anything like that. There's that video of him kicking Grant Williams in the groin. You know, these are professional.
Yeah, that was a few days ago. That was a couple days ago, right?
That was Friday, I believe.
So, oh, yeah. So, yeah, a couple days ago.
Yeah, so it's like one of those things where it's like, these are professional athletes. They know what they're doing with their body. He also, like, they challenged a foul where he, like, almost tried to throw Grant Williams to the floor. Like, it was a terrible challenge. In fact, they probably should have been, the result of the challenges were upgrading that to a flagrant, you know? Ooh. Like I was really surprised. And, you know, the thing is, he must be a really good guy off of the court, because that seems to be what I've gathered here, is people like him when it doesn't come to basketball context. And because otherwise, if he were like this off of the court, like not in basketball context, we've actually done a really good job in the NBA of kicking out bad dudes. I don't think you see too many bad, like people you don't want to talk to dudes. There might be a handful, but, you know, I think for the most part, we've searched for higher character players in the NBA. But, like, what he's doing, it's not basketball. It's not fair that he keeps getting away with it. And there are so many times where it's like, if any other player barked at the officials like Draymond does, they'd get teed, and they just kind of allow it. And for his sake, he still has like 3 years, $75 million, 2 years, $50 million. Yeah. I hope he gets to play out that contract. I'm not wishing anything against him financially, but, you know, it's getting to the point where it's not basketball, and I don't think that it's right that he keeps getting away with it.
Well, here's the thing. As someone who, you know, is from California originally and from the Bay Area, I know a lot of people out there still, and people that are, you know, either covering the team or close to the team. Steph Curry is why he's still there.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
It's not, and I'm not saying that Draymond's a bad guy or bad dude off the court. You know, you can take that how you want. Some people don't like him. Some people do, whatever it is. He's a little polarizing because it's either one end of the spectrum or the other with him. There's not a lot of middle ground, you know what I mean, with Draymond. But it's Steph Curry, because Steph knows that, and they know in general that, without him, the way that team has been constructed all these years, they don't really have a chance to win, even with Steph Curry going off.
Oh, Draymond.
You know what I mean?
Without Draymond.
Yeah, without Draymond, they don't really have a chance. I mean, a couple years ago in the finals, I know he struggled a little bit early on, but then he eventually came on. But during that run, now, obviously, Wiggins was really good on that run, too. But if they don't have a Draymond during that run, they probably don't even make the finals. I'm just going to be honest. Like, that's how much they need him, because of what he brings, not only defensively, because we know about that, but also offensively, what the load he takes off of Steph not having to have the ball all the time. And even going back years ago with Klay as well, when he was still the Klay we used to know, Klay Thompson we used to know, same thing. Those guys were free to roam the court and, you know, do what they needed to do. Steph didn't have to have the ball all the time. It still doesn't. So that he's really freed them up as that point forward, as we've come to know it over the years. But eventually there's got to be a point to where, you know, enough is enough, right? It's like when because him getting suspended and ejected, you're obviously hurting the team, because, you know, we need you. If you know, if everyone else knows that they need you, you don't understand that they need you, and you can't, you know, chill out sometimes.
I don't think that chill out's in his vocabulary. And that's just how it goes, right? Because it doesn't seem, like you say, it's Steph Curry. And it seems to me that you could take that Steve Kerr, he signed that 2-year extension. You could take that one of two ways. Either they're going to just do a massive rebuild, which I think they should do, like get whatever you can for Steph right now, which I'm sure is still a very high value trade person. really get whatever you can for Draymond, which is very low value. You kind of have to let Klay walk because he's going to get better offers than it seems like they're going to offer him. Get what you can for Andrew Wiggins. Build around Jonathan Kuminga, I guess. But like, we're sort of entering the end of this Warriors dynasty where what's the point of keeping them together? Right?
Well, here, like, you
for
also
good old time's sake,
yeah,
you know?
No, I get that. As far as Steph goes, I mean, you also have to look at it from a business aspect.
Oh, he's worth, you know, he's worth, you know, a quarter million or a quarter billion easily.
It's hard to just really get rid of him when he's still playing so well. You know what I mean? Even if the rest of the team isn't there near his level, you can always rebuild. I mean, because he's a shooter, he might play another 5 years. Now, I'm not saying he's going to be at, you know, nearly an MVP or all NBA all-star level for those whole 5 years, but he's got, to me, at least another 3 years where he's, you know, up there, at least a top 10 player in the league. If you can put pieces around him, you might be able to make another mini run, not a four championship run, but maybe you can squeak out one more, or at least, you know, get close to getting back to another one, not, you know, 10th place in the West where the Rockets are almost going to knock you out of the play-in, because the Rockets are only game back. The Warriors are not guaranteed to make it even into the play-in this year. So I don't see them trading Steph Curry anytime soon, because the business he brings to that franchise, just, you know, packing the house, people are going to still go to see him regardless of how good the Warriors are for the next however many years he wants to play. So I don't think there's really any good shot, any chance, unless there's just some, you know, groundbreaking offer that another team can, you know, offer you. But I don't really see anything like that happening. You know what I mean? I just don't see an offer being available like that. So the other guys, yeah. Klay is probably not much longer for this team, unfortunately. Same with Draymond. Wiggins, he's been up and down this year. He struggled a lot, especially early in the year. He may not be much longer for this team. They already got rid of Jordan Poole. So they, you know, Kuminga is the one of the guys they're probably going to keep around because he's young and he's been improving this year. But I just can't see them trading Steph for really anything.
Yeah.
I think it'll be hard. Really.
Yeah, it's more of trying to make a logical decision
in a
clearly emotional situation,
yeah. Right?
Because Steph is more than, oh, hey, you know, he's our best player. We're not really going in the direction that we want. Because like you said, they might not even make the play-in.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a tough conversation to have. And you know, what they call it, the gap years. Is that the 2 years that they didn't really make the playoffs?
Klay was hurt and Steph was hurt 1 year. Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's one of those things where you're right. And I'm approaching this from I'm not going to be emotional about emotional situation, but it seems to me that that's part of the reason they got rid of Bob Myers, or Bob Myers decided to step aside is probably what happened, I think, because he even said, Bob Myers on NBA courtside, or what is it called? You know, the ESPN?
NBA Today or one of those shows?
Whatever they call it. I think it's NBA Courtside, the pregame
probably
show.
Oh, the pregame, yeah.
Like where he literally was asked about the Klay Thompson thing, and he's like, oh, this is why I left. And he said it jokingly, but it's like, that's probably not far off from the truth. He sees that tough decisions need
the end is there. I mean, the end is here, basically. Like, we're pretty much at the end of the road. I definitely get that.
Draymond's got to be the first guy that they replace if they're going to start replacing somebody. But you're right. Is it a Steph Curry decision? Like, is he sort of getting that?
And that's the and that's what makes it tough, is the whole Steph Curry thing. I mean, we can obviously, I know you got to get out of here. I know the playoffs are around the corner, so I'm going to try to get you back on as long as, you know, whenever you're available. And we'll delve more into all this, including the playoffs. Tell them, Carl, real quick, where to find you on social media and, you know, everything you got going on coming up here soon.
I'm currently doing UTSA baseball, and I'm also going to take a social media break, but I'm doing that to get some stuff in the motion. Like, I'll still be on Instagram because I need that for certain, like, scheduling things, because people post their schedules daily for things that I do related to Instagram. But I'm usually at KS Media 13 on Twitter. or X, and I'm not going to be on there for just a little bit. Only when I'm on the desktop. I've deleted it from my phone. It's taken up too much time when I'm on my phone.
Carl, I can definitely understand that. And I appreciate you again, as always. Thank you for coming on. That's going to do it this week for episode 130 of the Courtside Crossover with Chris Partee. Go over, check us out on fullpresscoverage.com and the Full Press Coverage app, as well as Spotify, Podbean, anywhere else you find podcasts. Catch me also on Instagram, just like Carl, Twitter, and I'm on Blue Sky at Chris Partee. I'll check you out real soon. Peace.